I really thought when I saw 4:30, after some of you have been up since like 6 o'clock this morning, that this would be a little support group of about four of us. So I'm utterly amazed that you are all here. But I hope it's been a wonderful day for you. I hope you've learned many great things that are going to be very beneficial for you. And I hope this final class today will be of benefit. But I think we need to have a joke to begin with. And so I'm going to tell you my favorite, and by the way, true bereavement story, because I hope you'll get a little chuckle. I had a gentleman that I worked with after his wife had died. They were not natives of Utah. They lived somewhere back in the Midwest, and his passion was sailing. He loved to go sailing. And her passion was family history. They were not members of the church, but she was very much into doing genealogy and research. And so he promised her, as long as he could sail, that someday they would come to Salt Lake City and she could go to the genealogical library and do family history and research to fulfill her passion. And unfortunately, they hadn't lived in Salt Lake too very long before she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And that's where I came into the picture, because they were on the hospice that I work for. And because I do bereavement work, I followed up with him, and he was a darling man. I just thought he was so cute. And he had had his wife cremated, and he said, "If I tell you something, do you promise that you'll never tell anybody?" And I said, "Of course." So that tells you right there what kind of person I really am. But we'll hand him out the end things. He said, "My wife loved that genealogy library so much that I just figured there'd be nowhere on earth that she would rather be." So one night, I put on my trench coat and I had her cremains, you know, the ashes that are left over when someone's cremated, in a plastic bag. And I went over to that genealogy library and I sprinkled her in the flowers. And he said, "Do you think they'd care if they found out?" And I said, "Well, they're not going to find out. It's okay." He did that out of love. And I thought that was such a cute bereavement story, true too. Just a little bit about me. I'm so glad to be here. Really, I am, because talking about grief and loss and bereavement, I've done it for many years, and it really is something I'm very interested in, and kind of a passion for me. And I'm just a small town kid from Idaho, grew up on a farm, and but I've lived in Salt Lake for the last 42 years. But I'm in here. I'm still a farm kid. I've been a lifelong member of the church, but I am trained as a chaplain. And you know, when I heard about being a chaplain, I thought it was somebody that was in the military and somebody that was Catholic. So not there's a lot more people that are chaplains than just in the military, and religion has nothing to do with it, because a chaplain is just a spiritual care provider. And I've been working in hospice, focusing on bereavement, since 1998. So I suppose you could say that I am probably a grief and loss expert, but each of you are far more of an expert on your own grief and loss than I could ever be. So please keep in mind how unique an individual you each are, and that you may be in very different places in your journey of grief. And so, just for me to get a sense of who's here, I just expected three people, like I said, so we could do a little support group. You're kind of throwing me off by having so many people here. But just to give me a sense of who's here, you can just raise your hands. How long has it been since you lost your spouse? Less than 5 years. Oh my goodness. Is there anybody over 5 years? Okay. Anybody over 10 years? Okay, but the majority, it looks like, has been less than 5 years. Less than 3 years? Okay. Good for me to know. Another question. Was it a sudden loss? Was it an expected loss? Okay. And you can just call this out. Just call this out. What would you hope to discuss today that could be most beneficial for you in this session? Just throw out some words, throw out some whatever. So we be sure, and so we will talk about it.
They tell you to take care of yourself. What is that supposed to look like?
Okay, that's what we're here for. We're going to find that out. What else? Is that the main thing everyone is here to find out? Yes.
I'd like to find out how to deal with the fact that the rest of the family's not grieving like I am.
Okay, that's a really good point. Coping with, okay.
What's the new normal?
The new normal, oh geez. That's a hard one.
When you find out you're not coping well.
Oh.
As well as you thought you would.
Okay. Everything you've said, we're going to discuss. I've got it right here in this paper. So there is hope. Well, let me tell you that there are so many things we could discuss about self-care. We could be here much longer than 50 minutes. So what I did is I tried to focus on the things that perhaps you haven't thought of, and also the things that I thought might be important for you to consider. And before you all go, I have a handout that lists a whole bunch of things that some of the things we talked about may be listed on here briefly, but there's a whole bunch of ideas for self-care on this paper. So you don't have to take notes if you don't want to, but I will give you this handout today. And when you're talking about self-care, one of the best analogies I like to use, because women are notoriously bad at caring for themselves. They're great at caring for everybody else in their lives, but they're notoriously bad at caring for themselves because they think it's selfish. There's nothing selfish in grief and loss when it comes to caring for yourself. And my best analogy is this. If you got on an airplane and the flight attendant stood up there and said, okay, if the cabin loses pressure and those little bags fall down from the ceiling, I want everyone but those who are in grief and loss to put on their own oxygen mask first. But you people in grief and loss, you run around really quick and you slam those masks on everybody else. And if you're not passed out in the aisle, you reach up and get yours. Now, would that be ridiculous? Of course that would be ridiculous. What did they say? Put on your own mask first and then assist others. This is what we call self-care, taking care of yourself. And I believe, I'm a firm believer, that if we don't take care of ourselves first, we won't have anything left to take care of anybody else. Because what you have been through in the loss of a spouse is so traumatic, so difficult, so heartbreaking, it zaps all of your energy. Yes.
Well, a lot of us spent several years before they passed away
as caregivers.
That. And by the time they passed away, we were so exhausted and worn out and everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we felt guilty that we didn't do enough.
I've ordered a magic wand that I could come and bop everybody on the head with. It's been on back order for 18 years. And make it all better. And take away guilt. And take away pain. And take away discouragement. And take away loneliness, and they won't send me the dang wand. So you're right. Sometimes you have been a caregiver for years for a loved one, and do you know what that does? That sucks every bit of energy out of you. It sucks it out, and you keep doing it, and you keep doing it, and you keep doing it because you have to, and it's really important, and it's your job, and you keep it up, and all the time you're caring for them, a lot of you are not caring for yourself at all. It's kind of the nature of the beast. And so now that caregiving is over, hopefully for all of you, I hope it is, it's time for you to care for yourselves. And it's very, very extremely important. Because if you are to be able to go forward in your lives, care for others, be who you want and need to be, self-care is vital. It's not an option. It is vitally important. Now, I came up with some roadblocks, and some of the things you mentioned are the roadblocks to good self-care, and you can see if you agree that these are roadblocks. Others, not getting the support or understanding we need, trying to meet others' expectations, not wanting to bring others down so you put on a happy face, knowing that you don't really, knowing that they really don't want to know how you are when they say, how are you? Not receiving validation, acceptance, or acknowledgement. Having people avoid you because they don't know what to say. Having people say things that hurt us or do things that hurt or upset us. Feeling like everyone else has moved on and that you can never move on. Does anybody relate to the problems of others in our lives, in our grief life? Okay, others are a roadblock. Our own expectations, the shoulds, the oughts, the what's wrong with me. Being hard on yourself. There's a few gentlemen in here, and if you're as hard on yourself as women are, then I feel sorry for you, because women tend to, we're so good at beating ourselves up. Don't know why, but we're constantly beating ourselves up because we're not good enough, or we're not doing this, or we're not doing that. Being hard on ourselves is a huge expectation we put on ourselves, not helpful in the grieving process. Another expectation is feeling that you're not understood or supported by a boss or a coworker or a family member or a ward member or others in your life, feeling very unsupported. Other family members who are not grieving the way you think they should, or you're not grieving the way they think you should. So it's that expectation of how people should grieve. What about, I never expected this to be my reality. We were going to grow together. I never could have anticipated that I would be at this place or at this age and not have my partner with me. Some expectations may even go to, where's God when I need him most? Or, how can I believe in a God that would let this happen to me? Not unusual questions to be asking. Another thing, oh, and this is the hard one, and this is when the one I really need the magic wand for, and there is no magic wand, and I wish there were, and that's loneliness. I feel alone, even in a crowd of people. I'm a third wheel if I go out with other couples. I have to do all the things he or she used to do along with all my other responsibilities. There is no one who shares all those years of memories anymore. There's no one to come home to. My house is so quiet. I hate the evenings. They're so long. And then there's, somebody mentioned the creating the new normal. Let me tell you why that's a big roadblock. I never fix anything to eat because there's no one to eat with. And every time I sit down to eat, I'm reminded that I'm alone. So I just skip it. My yard is so big, and he used to take care of all of that. I can't maintain cars, pay bills, manage insurance, take care of investments, work the washing machine, remember the grandkids' birthdays, figure out the remote control, or balance the checkbook. They did that. They did those things. I can't do that. I do not know who I am or how to operate my life without him or her. I loved my old life. I do not like, and maybe I even hate, my life now. Those fall under the roadblock of creating the new normal. And then the final one that I thought of is, when we are emotionally weak, we tend to latch onto negativity more easily. such as nothing good is in my life. I feel so tired, so sad, so alone, so misunderstood, so frustrated, so overwhelmed. Any of those words ring a bell? I can't cope with even the smallest problem. My brain is not working. Something is the matter with me. In my profession of bereavement, we have a term for that brain. It's called foggy brain. Anybody here experience foggy brain? Okay. Those are just a few of the roadblocks that I came up with that prevent us from doing good self-care. So, where to start? Where do you start? And what does self-care mean? I love that somebody said, what the heck does that mean? Hopefully, we'll be able to establish what does taking care of yourself look like. And I have to start with the foundation, just like building a house. And I call them the big three. And I'll bet you can tell me what each one of those big three are and why they're a problem. What's one?
Spiritual.
I didn't think of that. Not one of my big three. Pardon? Okay, you guys are way over my head. Let's get real basic here. Health, eating, sleeping, and exercise. That's the foundation. If we don't have those things in place, nothing we try to put on top of that is going to be of much good. Because if your foundation is weak, what happens to your building? It falls down. So you have to build a good foundation. And let's talk about eating for just a minute. I alluded to it when I said, I don't cook. I had a lady the other day tell me, I cooked for 57 years. I'm not cooking anymore. And so, consequently, she's not eating anymore because she's not cooking. A lot of people say, I'm not hungry. Food doesn't taste good to me. If I sit down, then I realize I'm alone. I don't do well with eating. Or some people turn to eating for comfort, to feel better. So nutritional food is a must. You have to eat, and you have to eat well. And one of the suggestions I came up with it for this lady who was refusing to eat is keep a record. Keep a record of what you eat. You may be surprised how little you're eating. On the other hand, you may be surprised how much you're eating. But keep a record of every single thing every day that you do eat, and recognize good nutrition is one of the big three in the foundation. The other thing is keeping hydrated. How important it is to have enough water. And if you're not doing that, set your cell phone to go off and remind you, set the timer on your oven, whatever, but find a way to remember that you have to be hydrated. Two really important basics. You got to eat and you got to drink, and hopefully it's nutritional. Okay, the second part. Well, it varies from person to person, but, you know, they recommend, you know those hospital mugs that are about like this? Three a day. I think they're about 32 ounces. 32 ounces three times, if you can do that. And then you just spend your day going to the bathroom. So, see, you don't have any problems because you're always in the bathroom.
You get exercise.
Yeah, you get exercise. That'll give you some exercise. Eating is really important. Please don't ignore that. The next thing in the big three is sleep. Sleep. Sleep can be, what if that's all you do? We'll talk about that, but remind me. Let's talk about why sleeping is important. Really important. Because grief is exhausting. Grief drains, just like caregiving drains you, grief drains you too. Sucks your energy out. So getting good sleep is really important. And a new sleep study just came out this week that said this, and maybe you already know these things, but here's a reminder. Go to bed at the same time and get up at the same time. Sets a routine. Set your body clock so that you can fall asleep better. If you can't fall asleep after 20 minutes, they said, get up and find the most boring book that you can possibly find and read until you're tired, and then crawl back into that bed and see if you can go to sleep. But it's got to be really boring. Another thing, turn off all electronics. That means the TV. That means not having your cell phone in the room with you. That means if you need a noise machine, because there's too much noise and you need, you know, white noise, that's okay. Or a ceiling fan, that's okay. But what they're saying is TVs create light, cell phones create anticipation, so just turn those things off. Keep your room cool enough and dark enough. And if you are doing all of these things and nothing is working, and you've tried and tried and tried and tried to get good sleep, go see the doctor. I'm a big believer in if you're going for months without sleeping through the night, or at least getting, you know, the prime amount of sleep is 7 to 9. If you're not getting somewhere in there, at least 6, get help. You need to sleep. Now, someone said, what if all you're doing is sleeping? Did somebody ask that question? What if all you're doing is sleeping? You know, that's not good either, because sometimes, you know, oh, and one thing they said here is don't take naps, but I'm a nap believer, so I'm not telling you not to nap. Sometimes if you're sleeping too much, it may be a way of avoiding pain. You know, dull yourself in the pain. The only time I'm not in pain is when I'm asleep, so I'm just going to sleep. Or it may be a sign of depression. It may be a sign that physically you need to get a good checkup from your doctor. You had all those? Okay, good. So
I do have depression, but I'm on that.
Okay. Then you're taking, but you're still tired. You're still just exhausted. I understand that. How long ago was your loss?
7 years.
Okay. And is it because you're letting yourself spend a lot of time in bed, because then you don't have to deal with anything else?
When I wake up, I get up.
Okay. So you sleep at 13 hours a day?
I can sleep 10 to 11 okay. Without thinking about it.
And, you know, sometimes, yeah.
So is tiredness part of the grieving?
Oh, yes.
Because I'm tired all the time.
Yes.
No matter how much I sleep.
It is very much, because your energy's all been sucked out. And grief is hard work, extremely hard work. So feeling exhausted is a very normal feeling to have in grief, very, very normal. And let's go on to exercise, the big three. Okay, we got a foundation built here, three. You need to get a little exercise. It's hard when you're exhausted, really hard. So start slowly. Eat, just do what you can. It's just to walk halfway around the block, go halfway around the block. And maybe tomorrow you can go 3/4 of the way around the block. Or maybe you could just make it to the mailbox and back. But start moving. And a couple of things that might be helpful is to find a friend to go on that walk with, so you're accountable. So somebody's waiting for you to meet them so you can go on that walk. Or find a gym buddy. Find somebody that, you know, that does go to the gym that maybe you can go with, because then you're a little bit more likely to go. Find a new physical activity that maybe you're interested in, you never tried before, something that you can kind of, oh, I always wanted to learn to play that pickleball thing, you know, and I'm going to get me a racket, or I'm going to learn to do that. So you must move your body. There, at 5:30, I think it's 5:30, yeah, in the morning on KBYU, they're having a stretch class. You can tape it. And then you can watch it when you want and just do some stretches. But do something. Move your body. Getting exercise is vitally important. So we've built our foundation. We're going to eat well. We're going to sleep well. And we're going to get some exercise. That is the basic. And we have to do that in self-care.
How many days a week did you say? Every day?
Exercise? Let's be easy on ourselves. That's the next thing, is not being hard on yourself. If you can start out slow, if you can do that 2 or 3 times a week, that's great. If you can work up to 5 days a week, that would be wonderful. Do what you can. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't be hard on yourself, no matter what. So just do what you can. Now, one of the things that we mentioned as a roadblock is everything seems so dark, so heavy. I look at grief as kind of like a pit, and you're down in the bottom of the pit, and you can't even hardly, you can't see your way out, and you can't even see that there's sunshine out there sometimes. And several years ago, a really good friend of mine, her husband died suddenly, and we did a lot of grief work together. And she came back to me after the fact and said to me, you know all that talking we did after Sam died? Do you know what was the most helpful thing? And I said, no, but I would love to hear what was the most helpful thing. And she said, remember how you asked me before I went to bed every night, I needed to have a little notebook by my bed, and I needed to write down three positive things that had happened during the day. She said, above and beyond every single thing we talked about, that was the most helpful. And the reason I ask her to do that is this, is when you're down in that pit of grief, you really can't see that there are positive things going on around you, but there are. But I told her she could not go to sleep until she wrote those three things down. So it forced her during the day to be looking for something positive. And I said to her, hey, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be very small and simple, such as, it wasn't raining today. Or, my son didn't complain when I got him up to go to school. Or, best of all, there were no bills in the mail. So I'm not talking about big, major, I won the lottery type things. I'm talking about the small, everyday positive things that are happening, because in grief there are positive things going on, but sometimes we're so consumed and so inward and so much in the pit that we are not aware that there's anything positive in our lives. So if we're forced to take a look at and know that we have to be responsible to write them down every night, can't go to sleep until you do it, you will find yourself searching for something positive. And kind of along the same vein as that, I have done tons of reading on what creates a happy, good, positive life. And every article I've read, and I'm talking hundreds of articles, every article I've read, there is one thing that is I can count on will be mentioned. Anybody guess what it is? Gratitude. Gratitude. You guys already know what that is. And so perhaps the thing that you're going to write down, rather than three positives, may be three things that day that you are grateful for. But I guarantee you, if you don't remember anything else today besides eat, drink, sleep, exercise, please remember, if you will incorporate gratitude or positives into your life and record them on a daily basis, you will benefit. You will feel better. You will see change. It's a promise. It's a promise. It does work. I work with a wonderful man who lost his wife to cancer, I think in the third year of their marriage. They didn't have any children. And so I went to him and I said, you know, I'm going to be talking about self-care. And looking back over your experience, what advice would you have for self-care that you think might be beneficial for me to share with this group today? And this is, I kind of wrote down what he said because I thought he said it so well. And maybe we can, let's see, where's our clock? Oh, maybe we can't talk about it. Maybe I'll just tell you what he said. He said, with each little thing you do, you will probably not notice any difference, but the effects are cumulative. Grief is not a short-term process, so if you're constantly looking for signs of feeling or doing better, you are going to be disappointed. It's important to internalize that every little teeny drop of what you do to help yourself counts, even when the benefits are not obvious. And this was his example. Nothing sounds inviting. When friends, family, coworkers, or whoever invite you to do something, the temptation is to say no. And it's okay to say no if you feel that it will be too painful or that you are just not ready. However, my friend said, if you can make yourself go and do it, whatever it is, there may not be a major effect, but over time, these things will be of help, even when you do not realize that they are helping. Grief overpowers everything else. And time doesn't heal your wounds, but certainly time helps with the proper interventions. So bit by bit, getting out and allowing yourself to be with others does aid in the healing process. What do you think about his idea? Is it hard to go when people ask you to go do things? Is your temptation just to say, I'm too tired, or I just can't do that, or I'll be the third wheel, and I'm not up for it? Is that the temptation? It's easier, isn't it? It's easier to say no sometimes. But my friend who's been in the very situation that you're in said every time you say yes and go, even if you don't particularly enjoy it, it's like replenishing some of that energy that you've lost in the caregiving process and in the grieving process. You're putting a little bit back in. So if you can say yes every now and then, when somebody wants you to do something, there is great cumulative, over time, benefit. And it's a really important, he thought, this was one of the most important parts of self-care, is to allow yourself to interact with others, to get out of the house, to realize that, yes, as much as I didn't ever think it could, my life has to go forward. Any other comments? Anybody believe this? Yes.
Well, I just think it's hard when you're in that place to do that, because I think we're emotionally, it's hard to trust yourself to go out and mm-hmm. not fall apart and be embarrassed. So it's a real leap of faith to be able to do that. And when you're in that really beginning vulnerable part, I think that was really, I remember feeling, I don't think I can go because I don't know what's going to happen if I'm going to dissolve into a puddle. And so it was really tough to do that.
That's a really good point. I'm so glad you brought that out. Is it embarrassment, and I don't want to make a bad time for the people I'm with, and certainly the last thing I want to do is be invited out and bring everybody down, kind of all of those things, okay? And that's a very, very, very good point. And that's why I said this is an individual journey for each of you. Only you know where you're at and what you're capable of. So there may be times when you just have to say no, but hopefully it won't be every time. Hopefully you'll find sometimes when you feel up for saying yes. If you're undecided, tip towards the yes instead of tip towards the no, because it will be helpful, and it's good self-care to have some social going on. This was the saddest thing. I had a lady come visit with me, and she said that her dearest friend wasn't there for her and did not understand her needs. So she says, I'm not going to be friends with her anymore. She should, if anybody should understand what I need and understand me, she should be there for me. And I felt so bad to hear her even consider cutting herself off from her friend because she didn't feel understood. What do you think about that? Has anyone ever had that type of a... Yes.
Yeah,
you've had that?
Yeah, but people are just doing the best they know how to do it. And unfortunately, when you're in this place of depletion, you sometimes are the one that has to just be understanding and let it go. Because it's uncomfortable for everyone.
Yes.
So I'm sort of blazing the trail, which I didn't think I'd have to blaze, but here I am. But, you know, I'm helping them understand that it's okay and we can do this. And they're really good. They'll ask me places and they'll, you know, I feel when you say third thumb, I'm the biggest third thumb there is. But, I mean, it's not easy, but it gets easier. The more, like you said, you just, you know.
Thank you. It's hard. It's not easy.
It stinks.
It stinks. It's that you're right. It does. But thank you for being brave enough to recognize that sometimes you're going to have to be the one helping teach others how to teach people in, how to treat people in grief. Thank you. Yes.
I was going to say, I just discovered, I'm into year 8 now, and I just discovered that my empty nester group, the family home evening, is wonderful because they don't have any kids, and they are really, there's many of us in there that aren't, they're single or widowed in this group, and it has been a real godsend because they will say, let's all go out, and we're just already part of that group. So if there is an empty nester group around you, that might be a really good place for you to go, because I went in and they just like, we're so glad, yes, I am. That's great. Because they often have a social life within that, and now we're a part of that. So if you have that, you might want to try that.
Thank you. Wonderful suggestion. Very good. Thank you so much. Did I see another hand?
Yeah, and then also if there isn't the empty nesters, even though you may feel you don't belong in the singles group, there are a lot of activities through the church with the others that are single, though they may be divorced, and that isn't a dating site either.
Good. Thank you. Good suggestion. Yes. Oh, she said that the singles ward.
Or activities.
Single activities. She said it's not a dating site. That's good to know. Yes?
The problem I've had is all my couple's friends, which is gone.
Yeah. So you feel abandoned. Along with the loss of your spouse, you're abandoned by the people that were formerly your couple friends. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
I live in St. George, and they came down, three couples came down. And on their way back to Salt Lake, they stopped into my house. They said, oh, we had such a good time in Vegas. Went over to see Mamma Mia, and I said, I've just been dying to see that.
I'm sorry, that's another hurt, isn't it? It's another loss. Yeah, loss upon loss upon loss upon loss. Yeah, that was pretty dang blunt, yes. A natural thing. I'm sorry, that hurt. That really hurt. Yes.
Well, you're talking about sometimes putting ourselves out there first. My husband just passed in December, and the church kept asking me, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? There's not a lot that people can do for you. And I did not want to get depressed, and I did not want to stay home alone, and I knew it was going to be hard. So I said, well, I'd like you to send around a sign-up sheet, which actually never got done because people did it on their own. But I would like you to send around a sign-up.
You are awesome. Would you like to come up and finish teaching the class? Did you all hear what she said? Did you hear her? That was awesome. Give yourself a pat on the back right now. You ladies, pat her. Pat her.
That doesn't mean that I don't have my really down.
I know you do. I know you do.
You have to make the effort because, you know, our families and our friends are involved in their own lives. And you have to do it when they can do it. So, and you don't just have to go to lunch. You can do stuff at night, go to the theater and stuff with them. Be part of their family. Be their grandma.
That's so good. You took control of something you had control over, because when we lose someone, we feel so out of control. But you took control where you could, and you made up your mind, I am not going to sit here hoping for people to come and help me. I'm going to help myself. I say bravo to you. Good for her. Clap for her. She needs applause. She did good. Yes.
I just went to Kent Allen's session on friendship building, new identity, new friendships and hope. And he talked about how you need to get out of your comfort zone. You can't just stay motivated. Join a club, something that you're interested in. reading club, bowling, anyway, something, and you will meet new friends. You probably need to meet new friends. You just have to put yourself out there. Take a chance. You know, if you want to be a skydiver, you know, whatever.
And her key word there is work. It takes work, but there's reward. There's a payback for that work if you're willing to do it. That's a wise bishop. It's a great idea. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, sometimes when we give service to others, we forget about ourselves even for a few minutes, and it's really beneficial in self-care to be able to reach out and give to someone else. So that's an excellent idea. I really appreciate that. Let's see. Can we wrap this up in 5 minutes? Do you guys want to be done and out of here? I wish I had time to explain this fully, but hopefully this little explanation will be good enough. There is a need in good self-care for responsibility-free time. In other words, time to think, time to process, time to, I mean, if you have the capability to have a weekend or more just to care about yourself, to get away, I mean, going to a fancy spa in St. George or L.A. or somewhere would be ideal, but maybe we don't have that, but we do have the ability, hopefully, to spend some quality time processing, thinking, being with ourselves, because sometimes we don't do that because we have responsibilities, but boy, it can be really beneficial. My greatest loss was a few years ago, my youngest sister, I'm family of six girls, oldest, my youngest one, the best of the bunch by far, died of cancer. And losing her was like terrible. And I had to leave my job for 3 weeks. And one of those weeks was spent doing nothing but sitting on the beach. And I was fortunate that I could do that. But I had to cry and cry and cry and walk up and down the beach. And that was the alone time, the responsibility-free time I needed to be able to cope with that kind of a loss. So if you can find some time, even if it's just a weekend, where you don't have responsibilities that you can devote to you, that would be very, very beneficial. Finally, if you feel stuck, and only you know if you're stuck, but some people get stuck in grief, I would suggest finding a counselor who specializes in grief and loss. You can also try a support group, a grief support group, if that appeals to you. Perhaps you have a friend who is understanding and who you can talk to and who is a good listener and not someone who will be busy telling you their stories. You don't need to hear their stories unless you want to. Recognize sometimes that your grief may be bigger than you know how to handle by yourself. Just this week, just two days ago, I met with a woman whose husband died 15 months ago, and she finally decided after 15 months that she needed help. So it's never too late. It is never too late to get help with grief if you feel that you are not progressing. And again, not being hard on yourself, not expecting more than you can give. But it's never too late to get help with grief if it's bigger than what you could handle. I could have never handled the loss of my sister if I didn't have, you know, 15 years of training behind me and all surrounded by a hospice team and a group of friends to hold me up. So I understand what that's like. Now, there are a couple of books. There's a gazillion grief books. My husband constantly says to me, why don't you need to write a book? And I've said to him, do you know how many grief books there are out there? Way more. But there are two that I'm going to recommend to you because these are my two favorite. My very favorite, and I've read hundreds. I like this one. It's called Healing After Loss, Daily Meditations for Working Through Grief, and the author's last name is Hickman. This is available on Amazon for about $5-$7, not very much, if you buy it on Amazon. Her surname is Martha Whitmore Hickman. Do you know why I like this book so much? Because a man told me about it. And if a man would be interested in it, it's certainly good for women. But the reason I like this book and the reason people I've given it to come back and say this was such a good thing is because it is a day, one little tiny page to read every single day. And it's short. And it gives you a very positive, upbeat thought. And she reads this before she goes to bed at night because it puts her in a place of a little bit of comfort, a little bit of peace. And this has been extraordinarily helpful for her. So anyone can do one page a day. So this is I highly recommend this book. It's really good. My other book that I love so much is called A Grace Disguised. And the author is Jerry Sitzer, S-I-T-T-S-E-R, A Grace Disguised. I love this book so much because it is a very spiritual book. It's not written by an LDS author, but it's a very, very, very spiritual book. And someone reading it said, this man can articulate what I feel in here, but I don't have the words to put out here. And so it helps formulate concrete ideas, feelings, emotions in a way that she relates to very well. I love this book. It's very good. So these are the two. Jerry Sitzer, S-I-T-T-S-E-R. Jerry Sitzer. Again, this is available on Amazon. If you buy it at Barnes & Noble, it's $20. If you buy it on Amazon, probably $15. So these are both available on Amazon. I think they're very good. And I would just like to finish by saying that the need to call on Heavenly Father, He promised us in John 14:18 that I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. And my years in doing grief and loss has taught me beyond a shadow of a doubt that yes, indeed, He will not leave you comfortless. He will send angels to you through the form of friends, family, strangers, conferences like this, because He loves you. And I know He knows of your pain. I know He knows of your loss. I know He knows of your suffering. And He has promised to be there for you. So don't ever forget the power of calling on our Heavenly Father. I have a testimony of Him and of His atonement. And sometimes that's what keeps us going, is the knowledge that we will see our loved ones again. And thank you so much for being here and for your participation. And I wish you success in your journey of grief. And I promise you healing is possible. Our grief seems so overconsuming sometimes, but within time it does become more manageable and less intense. Does it ever go away? No. It doesn't, but it does become something we can manage, and that is a promise to you. And thank you so much, and I say these things in the name of our dear Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.